Hello once again, everybody, and thank you for joining me here on this Monday, December 9th edition of Bang the Book Radio. My name is Adam Burke, your host for the next hour or so. We're going over all kinds of things in the world of sports from a betting focus. Happy to have you with me as we kick off this week here on the program. One guest joins me for the full show here today. That is professional handicapper Kyle Hunter from huntersportspicks.com. We'll chat about the college football bowl season, some early thoughts on the lines, and of course, take a look at Army and Navy coming up here this weekend. Second half of today's show, our handicapping the hardwood segment, where we'll talk some college basketball. We'll talk about situational spots here at this time of the year and break down some of the more interesting handicaps here for this week on the hardwood. Over at bangthebook.com, we are your one-stop shop for sports betting news and information. My college football power ratings updated here for the bowl season and my college football opening line report for the bowl season. The last of those two articles here. Hopefully you've enjoyed those. Thanks for reading them throughout the season. But college football year starting to wind down here now with just all the bowl games. And we will preview all of the bowl games, including the Celebration Bowl, over at bangthebook.com. So make sure you keep an eye out for that. On a daily basis, we're covering college basketball, the NBA, the NHL, and of course covering the NFL all throughout the week. So head on over to bangthebook.com. Check all that stuff out as well. Finally, as you know, this and every edition of Bang the Book Radio, presented by our friends over at DSI Sportsbook, BTB, and the number 200 is that promo code. 100% deposit match bonus for the sportsbook, 100% deposit match bonus for the live casino at BetDSI. It's only a game until you bet it. One guest, two segments on today's show. That is professional handicapper Kyle Hunter from huntersportspicks.com. How's it going today, man?
It's going all right, man. It's Monday morning here, kind of dreary weather, not the nicest of days, but I'm looking forward to talking some college football and college basketball.
Yeah, it should be a whole lot of fun, and I was out of town this past weekend. You were sleep-deprived this past weekend, so we'll try to get into our normal groove here with this Monday edition of the show, but before we take a look at Army-Navy, before we take a look at all the upcoming bowl games here, obviously it makes sense to talk about what we just saw this past weekend. LSU dominates Georgia, Ohio State, awful first half against Wisconsin. We get that flip in the college football playoff. LSU now takes on Oklahoma. Ohio State draws that dreaded matchup with Clemson. Outside of that, anything else kind of stand out to you here from conference championship week?
I thought the no-show from Utah was really the big story, other than the flip of the rankings, obviously. You know, honestly, I was really surprised Utah played that poorly, and especially in the run defense. You know, they were so good run defense throughout the course of the season. You expected that Oregon was going to have to beat them through the air if they were going to do something. And Justin Herbert didn't even have to complete a pass for what, about two quarters in the game there, where, you know, Oregon still wins pretty big. I thought the no-show from Utah was really the story of the weekend, other than obviously LSU and Ohio State flipping spots.
Yeah, it was strange to see Utah play like that. And I mean, I had that game 4.5 and I didn't trust myself. I didn't trust my power rating. Didn't take Oregon, kind of regretting that one a little bit. You know, Utah is one of those teams that kind of played, you know, some relatively weaker competition, caught some teams in bad spots, stuff like that. And seems like a lot of us kind of had them overrated from a power rating standpoint. And then that's what we get there in that Friday game. I want to touch on Baylor and Oklahoma, because Oklahoma, we talked about this a lot last week. They are so inconsistent over the course of a game. They'll play one good half. They'll play one bad half. In this case, they played a couple of bad quarters, one in each half here. But the fact that this game went to overtime with Baylor losing Charlie Brewer, their quarterbacks go 9 of 27 in the game, wind up with 230 yards on 9 completions. They couldn't run the rock at all, 1.2 yards per carry. And still a game. I don't know what's going on with Oklahoma. I don't know if this is a Lincoln Riley thing. I don't know if this is an Alex Grinch thing. I don't know what the hell this is, but week in and week out, Oklahoma squandering talent all over the place. I don't know what to do with them going into that game against LSU.
Well, I mean, you know, my first thought was going to be that I like LSU in that game, but I knew the price was going to be high. Minus 13 is hard to take, obviously, and 81% of the bets already on LSU in that game. And I think that's the way it'll continue to go, is that everybody wants to bet LSU there against Oklahoma. I would be really surprised if LSU loses that game. Certainly Oklahoma has some some pretty quality talent. Lamb is really a force on the outside. Lincoln Riley, I still think he's a good coach, certainly. I don't know if he trusts Jalen Hurts as much as he's trusted his last couple quarterbacks. And I think that there's probably a reason to not trust him as much as the other guys. I mean, Hurts has put up some good numbers, but in Saturday's game, it really struck me that, you know, Oklahoma, when they got the lead, was really being cautious. And I know some people will say they knew Baylor couldn't score very much, but all it took was a couple big plays, and that's what Baylor ended up getting. And honestly, the key play in that game was Baylor got that really long pass from way back in their own end. If Oklahoma doesn't run down that receiver, Baylor takes the lead there in that game. So that was really a key play, and then got them to overtime, or they might have just lost outright, and we would have been talking about Baylor here in the playoffs. Oklahoma, to me, certainly a little bit better on defense than they've been in past years. But as we said, you know, it doesn't seem like they're as much improved as it looked like they were. And then on offense, I don't feel like they're quite as dynamic. And I don't think Jalen Hurts is quite as consistent. He makes some more mistakes than what we saw with Kyler Murray. So Oklahoma, a team to me, yeah, I have quite a few questions about them, especially for a team that, you know, we're talking about a team that made the college football playoffs. So clearly they're a very good team, but still quite a few question marks about them.
Yeah, it's just it's not a good offensive look when Jalen Hurts has 23 carries for 38 yards in that game with a long of 8 yards. And again, I mean, maybe we're not giving Baylor enough credit. Maybe we're not giving Matt Rhule and that defense enough credit. But at the same time, I mean, this Oklahoma team, I feel like they have not played a complete game all year long. And even if they do it against LSU, they still might not cover the number. So it's kind of a crazy state of affairs there with that four spot. Quite frankly, I don't know if anyone's deserving of the four spot. And like you said, it would have been Baylor, a Baylor team that, again, you know, went 9 of 27 passing, that probably would have gotten that fourth spot if they find a way to win that game. And you know, they were right there on the doorstep to do so. So that was a big takeaway for me is, you know, Oklahoma, again, in a spotlight role, just not really looking the part. And I clearly haven't adjusted them enough in my power ratings. I mean, my line for that game against LSU, I've got LSU here a 10-point favorite, and that lines up to 13 now. So, obviously, I haven't adjusted Oklahoma down enough. LSU, I mean, maybe the only thing you worry about here is, as crazy as it sounds in a playoff semifinal, maybe all you worry about for the Tigers is a look ahead, because they should win that game and should win that game comfortably, especially after seeing what they did to Georgia here this past weekend. All right, so before we get to the bowl games here, we've got Army-Navy. You and I talk about this game every year, and I love that this is still a standalone game. I love that this game gets the spotlight that it deserves. And as you mentioned in your notes that you sent over to me here today, it seems like the total's finally gotten the attention that it deserves, even opening too high at 45 and now coming down into the 41 range.
Yeah, at this point, everybody knows that the under is the way to play this game. I will say for many years, I was just able to take the under at the open every single year and just, you know, make some really good money with this one. I've kind of been priced out yesterday. I wasn't even around paying attention to the lines coming out right as the 45 hit, or I would have taken that. And then, you know, obviously been in great shape as far as even being able to find a middle, because I imagine this number will continue to go down. But, you know, at some point, this total is going to be 36 or something ridiculous, because, I mean, it's just the secret's out on this one. The under wins every time these two teams play. But at some point, you know, the price gets so low that I'm a little bit worried to take the under. So I usually, like last year, I stayed off. I'll probably just stay away this year. But, you know, certainly my lean is the under in this game. I will say, as I look at this game, though, Army's been disappointing. You know, they're 5-7 on the year. You know they want nothing more than to finish with a win here. This is a huge game for both teams. I'm not saying Navy will overlook this game, certainly. Navy's going to a bowl game. Army's 5-7. Army is a better team, I think, than 5-7. I think that they have disappointed so far this year. They're plus 0.33 in yards per play margin, but they're 5-7. So Army certainly has potential. I couldn't lay this many points with the total as low as it is. You know, I know that Navy has a better run defense than does Army, but Navy and Army are both accustomed to seeing this triple option every single day in practice. That's why the under has done so well in this game and in the Army Air Force games and all Academy games. So, you know, I have to say that I think that 10.5 is a little bit too much. I would lean toward Army here in this one, thinking that this game will be pretty low scoring. 10.5 is quite a bit of delay. Like I said, the Army defense has not been very good at stopping the run, but I think they'll do pretty well at stopping the triple option that they see every single day in practice.
This is going to be one where I think I'm actually going to lay the lumber with Navy here. I think I have to take the middies in this spot. Triple revenge for them. They've lost this game 3 years in a row after winning it every year from 2002 to 2015. The scary thing here is this. You know, even when Army wasn't very good, this is rarely a game won by margin. 34-7 for Navy in 2013, 31-17 in 2010, a 14-point win in 2009. 34-0 in 2008, 38-3 in 2007. So it can happen, and it has happened before. It just hasn't happened in the last five meetings. It hasn't happened much, you know, over the last 15, 20 years. The thing for me is this, though. Army, obviously they're not going to a bowl game. Even if they got the six wins, they're not going because they beat Morgan State and VMI. Only one of those FCS wins would have counted anyway, so they're not bowl eligible. The teams they've beaten this year, Rice, UTSA, Rice is, you know, better than we thought. They weren't a great team in week one, although they did keep it close with Army. UTSA was terrible. They're, you know, a bottom five, bottom six power rated team. Oregon State, UMass, and VMI. Navy's a damn good team this year. And Army really did underachieve, as you mentioned. I mean, I had Army go in line for 9 or 10 wins going through my season win totals over the summer. Obviously, they're nowhere close to that. They have not been a very good team this year. This is a chance for Navy to kind of step on them a little bit if they're given that opportunity. And I think there's a good chance that they are given that opportunity. So even though it's very scary to lay 10.5 here and my pure power rating number actually up in the 14.5 range, I think I've got to do it. I think I have to take a stab with Navy here because they are just head and shoulders the better team. And again, they've got that triple revenge with a chance to really get one back.
I mean, I can't disagree with a lot of what you said. I still lean toward Army. So I'll at least lean against what you're thinking here in this one. Usually we are along the same line. So I guess we go heads up in this one a little bit. I don't know that I'll bet this one, but it's one that I'm interested in watching the game more than I am in betting it. You know, I'd rather just play the under, but I wish the number would be higher. So to me, you know, I think Navy's a very good team. It's been hard to adjust them up enough. You know, they're 8-3 ATS. The thing that I was a little bit slow to react to on Navy is that I didn't think their defense was as good as what they were playing. And they really continued to play pretty well on defense. They had a couple bad games, but, you know, 17th in the nation in run defense surprised me quite a bit for Navy. So Navy certainly had a really good season. I think Army's a little bit better than what they look like. And I just lean plus the points basically on a principle of knowing how low scoring these games usually are and that they're going to run the ball every time and take all kinds of clock. So I could understand the point of thinking that Navy has revenge here and they're clearly the better team. I just think that it's a pretty big line considering the total.
I will throw something kind of interesting out there. Last year, Army, and that was one of the that was probably the best Army team that we've seen in, you know, the last 30, 40, 50 years, 4.93 yards per carry. This season, 5.37 yards per carry. So they've actually been more efficient on the ground. The defense has fallen off quite considerably. They've actually been more efficient on the ground this year than they were last year. So maybe there is some sort of disconnect there, obviously not having as much success in the passing game, I guess I would say this year. But again, their defense really falling off it. And we kind of expected that with Jay Bateman going down to North Carolina. And I think it's a good segue into the bowl season here in that it's not just losing head coaches that can have a big impact. In a lot of cases, the coordinators have even more of an impact. Bateman, one of those guys for Army, we see the drop off. So keep that in mind here, and maybe not necessarily just for the Bulls, but as we head into 2020, losing coordinators is a really, really, really big deal.
Yeah, absolutely. And it's something that doesn't get talked about near as much. And that's why you want to consider it quite a bit, because you're not going to hear that from most people. And it definitely has value. And it's something that, you know, some of these coordinators mean a lot to the teams. And like you said, I mean, Army, you can tell that that was the case to them. So, you know, in bowl season, we want to see who goes where, who's going to be having a new play caller on which side of the ball. Certainly very important.
Well, I mean, think about it. You know, Clemson looks like Jeff Scott's going to take the South Florida job, which is kind of interesting. But Clemson, you know, Dabo Swinney's had the same coordinators 5 years running. And that's a rarity when you talk about a major conference program like that, especially one, excuse me, that's always on the national landscape with regards to the college football playoff. And I'm sure he'll stay through the playoffs. I'm sure USF will allow him to do that. But, you know, continuity is so important with a lot of these teams here. You know, Ohio, their defensive coordinator retired, right? Frank Solich had the same coordinators for what, 15, 18 years in a row, something like that. Their DC retires, and all of a sudden their defense is awful. I mean, these things really do matter. They matter in the context of the bowl handicap as well. And that's something that's very important to point out here as we start digging into some of these bowl games and some of these matchups and spots in particular, that this is a much, much different handicap from anything you see during the regular season.
It's completely different. Don't handicap this the same way that you have the regular season games. I don't think you'll do well if you consistently try to handicap it the same way. We talk about this every year, but you know, maybe some people haven't listened to us in previous years. Motivation is everything this time of the year. I think more people know that than what used to know that. So, I mean, it's all about motivation. Who wants to be where they are? Some of these games are destination games. If so, you can also think about who really wants to win a football game and who just is excited to travel to that location, because it's not always the case that just because it's a destination game, you're excited to play the football game, because we've seen some teams really lay an egg in those destination games before that were kind of a disappointing season overall. You think maybe they'll get up for the destination game. They must have just wanted to travel, and they get to the game and obviously they don't play well. So I think that that is something we'll continue to see. Obviously, it's hard to say exactly which teams will be excited and who won't be excited. But I think that you can kind of this is a good time of the year to read all the press quotes, to read, to listen to the coaches, to try to get on Twitter and listen to the everything you can read from the beat writers. It's a good time of the year to look for the little nuggets. You know, you can kind of read between the lines sometimes.
Yeah, you definitely can. And it's good that these bowl games are, you know, fairly spread out. I mean, we get a good bit of preparation for a lot of these teams. The first bowl game, December 20th, down in the Bahamas between Buffalo and Charlotte. So we've got, you know, basically 10 days from the time that the bowl matchups are announced to the time of the first bowl game to, you know, sort of organize our thoughts, think through some of these things. I wouldn't worry too much about grabbing numbers, getting out there. You know, I mean, obviously these lines are close from a power rating standpoint, but a lot of other circumstances and factors come into play here with these bowl games. Something else I'll mention here. I'm not going to say that motivation is overblown, because I don't think that you can ever say that in the bowl season, but I do think it's a better first half angle, because once these teams get between the lines, instinct kind of takes over. You know, you're not, where motivation factors into the equation is that you're not taking the preparation period seriously. You're not looking at film study. You're not listening to the coaches. You know, you're doing whatever you want to do to enjoy the end of the season. You're going through practice and weight room and all that, but maybe you're not going through the playbook. Maybe you're not going through the opposition's playbook, you know, paying attention in film study, stuff like that. I think the first half is where motivation is a big deal, because in the second half, a lot of times, if a team doesn't quit, the better team's going to play better in the second half because they're just more athletic. They get into the flow of the game, stuff like that. So if you feel like you've got a really substantial motivation mismatch, play a first half line with that. Maybe take a smaller piece of the full game. You may get some middle opportunities with second halves as well.
Yeah, and that's especially true if you think that you have a motivation edge, but they're not the better team. Like you said, sometimes the better team shows up in the second half. Sometimes the better team might be the more motivated team. So if that's the case, then maybe it's a little bit better to take the full game, or it's safe to take the full game. I do agree with you that sometimes motivation, there's a big edge on one side, and actually they're the team that's clearly the weaker team. Sometimes they jump out to a lead, or they're tied at halftime, and then they're just blown away in the second half just because they're not good enough. You know, maybe they're really up for the game, but they're not nearly as good as the other team. So I think that when you think you have the weaker team with the big motivational edge. I think a first half is a perfect angle for that.
Well, and you think about it, we look at one example here specifically, the Frisco Bowl between Kent State and Utah State. Kent State, last bowl game 2012, third bowl game in program history. So everyone's sitting there thinking, oh man, this team's got to be so motivated. They got to be so jacked up to go to this bowl game. What happens with the line? It goes from Kent State plus 8 to Kent State plus 9.5. Maybe it's a fade of the MAC. Maybe it's a buy of, you know, what's going on with Utah State's offense and the fact that you're finally going to get probably a healthier Jordan Love at this point in time. But that's the thing. You know, Kent State, oh, they have every reason to be motivated. Yeah, they do. But there's a reason that line went from 8 to 9.5. Maybe it's a little bit of a setup. You'll get a lot of those here in the bowl season. But, you know, keep that in mind, too, that it's not always just about these teams. For better or worse, it's about their conferences, too. And the MAC is awful in bowl games. And that's part of the equation here with this line move.
Yeah, a quick vent from me is that I really wanted to go against a lot of MAC teams in this bowl season. And as it stacks up, you know, their opponents, the prices we see, I find it hard to do that, you know. And this one, really, Utah State's a team I'd rather fade, too. You know, I'm not excited to back a Utah State team that I don't think is very well coached. And, you know, they were disappointing this year on offense. Jordan Love doesn't have enough help around him. Play calling's been a bit of a problem for them. I don't want to bet Kent, but I hate to lay this many points with Utah State either. So, yeah, I think that there's going to be people wanting to fade the MAC, and I can't blame them at all. Like I said, I think it's a little bit tougher to fade the MAC than what I really wanted it to be.
Well, and that's something else here, too. You know, you mentioned in the notes here, the shorter travel, possible home field advantage. You know, these are always interesting things, too. We take a look, for example, at Central Michigan and San Diego State in the New Mexico Bowl. Long trip for Central Michigan, but you know they just lost the MAC title game. They don't want to finish the season with back-to-back losses. Jim McElwain, pretty good head coach. Rocky Long's Aztecs, not a great team. I think they were kind of disappointing by a lot of accounts this year. They're going to Albuquerque. You know, they play in Albuquerque because New Mexico is within their conference. Now, they don't go there all the time, but you know, still, it's one of those things where you're going somewhere you've already gone. You know, yeah, it's a closer, shorter travel. You're more familiar with the environment and the venue. Also, how excited are you to go there? That's what's difficult about the bowl season, is that we can't quantify that. We're just kind of making educated guesses based on, you know, history or just what we know about those two teams or those specific coaches.
Yep. And Rocky Long going back to New Mexico. This is an interesting game. I will say that San Diego State's a team I wanted to fade too. So here we are in the same position. San Diego State usually has a really hard time scoring points. I mean, this is a team that, as I've said before, is basically set up as the best under team you could ever get. You know, they can barely throw a forward pass. Usually they can't run very well. Washington's not healthy. They still have a good defense. They're going to play good defense. Central Michigan's been a good story this year. They lose that MAC title game. You know, I can't lay 4.5 points with San Diego State. I think this will probably be a low scoring close game. So San Diego State has the advantage as far as playing closer to home. I would think Central Michigan would be up for this game. I'd want to play an under, but I see BetOnline has 40.5, and I don't think I can take under 40.5. But again, it depends on the matchup too. You know, you can want to fade a team or back a team, but certainly is matchup dependent.
Well, it's one of those things too. A lot of people have trouble with that Rocky Long 3-3-5 at San Diego State, but Jim McElwain was the head coach at Colorado State. So, you know, he planned for it. It was a while ago and obviously with different personnel, but he's at least more familiar with it than most of the teams that would go into a game against San Diego State. So what does that mean to you in this whole handicapping process? You know, because he doesn't see it all the time anymore. Does he still have some of that data? Does he still have, you know, some of his game plans? Does he still hold on to that stuff? At least, again, he has a frame of reference against that 3-3-5. And there's always these little storylines to these bowl games. You know, you always have some little thing, a coach going back somewhere, you know, a coach facing a former coordinator or a GA or something like that. You always get these little things, whether they're by design or not. I'm not entirely sure, but you know, that's one of those games where there is a lot that goes into that handicap, including something like the shorter travel, the home field advantage type of thing. I will say this, as I was going through and putting my numbers together this morning, the biggest home field short travel addition I made to a line was 1.5. And I gave that to Wyoming taking on Georgia State in the Arizona Bowl in Tucson because, again, it's closer to Wyoming. It's something that they're a little bit more accustomed to than Georgia State would be. But overall, I mean, I maybe gave 1 point here, 1 point there. Nothing more than that in terms of the lines that I put together.
Yeah, I think Louisiana Tech would be another one that they're in a pretty favorable position there against Miami. I think that's really baked into the line, though. You know, when I was looking at these matchups, the first thing I thought was, you know, La Tech might be a good look here. They were +7.5. Now they're +7 most places. So, you know, if Miami really wants to play in that one and is up for that game, they could blow out La Tech. But at the same time, Miami has been really bad in bowl games. I think maybe 1-6 in their last 7 or something like that. And they've really been blown out in some of those games. And you have to wonder if they're very excited about this game. I would think the motivational edge here would be for Louisiana Tech. But, you know, again, I think the line is not terrific if you're wanting to back Louisiana Tech. It might even be one of those games where if you like Louisiana Tech, you might want to play part of it on the money line because I think there's a chance that they win that game outright. I also think there's a chance that they lose that game by a decent amount. So that's another one that's interesting to me. You know, to me, it's a Miami team that has so much more talent than does Louisiana Tech. But let's be honest, they didn't finish the season off very well. And now they go to play Louisiana Tech, which is probably not exactly where they wanted to go in a bowl game.
No, definitely not. I mean, you've got a couple of teams that are playing at home. Well, two teams that are playing at home here. FAU, they're playing at home in the Boca Raton Bowl against SMU. I actually like SMU in that game, by the way. Then BYU in Hawaii. Hawaii playing at home in the Hawaii Bowl. Surprise, surprise. A couple of others that I kind of looked at here. I gave Navy 1 point going to Memphis in the Liberty Bowl. Just because, you know, they play there. So I gave them 1 point there against Kansas State, which is a really interesting handicap. Chris Klieman's seen the triple option before from the FCS ranks. That's kind of a fun game there. I gave Arizona State 1 point in El Paso. I gave Louisville 1 point in Nashville just because it's a shorter trip. Though I do think Mississippi State fans will show up because why not go to a destination bowl? Gave USC 1 point in the Holiday Bowl just for staying out west. So some stuff like that kind of factoring into the equation a little bit here for me. But, excuse me, one thing I do want to ask you about here, you know, market entry. I know you kind of alluded to this already. We're going to see waves of activity in these bowl games. We see people grabbing the numbers early on. We see additional waves of bets as limits increase. Also, as we get announcements, whether it's a coach or a coordinator leaving, somebody sitting out for the draft. What do you kind of do? I mean, when do you start to feel comfortable, you know, locking stuff in here?
Yeah, I'll be honest. I'm far more cautious when it comes to taking lines early in bowl season. There's multiple reasons for this, and we've talked about these some before, but, you know, we can expand on this a little bit. It's the fact that there's a lot more time between the games. There's always going to be some players suspended. There's always going to be issues like that. There's going to be some players that sit out, especially for good teams who are kind of disappointed to be in the bowl game that they're in. And, you know, there's a few of those that you can kind of look at the game and think, I think there might be some key players set out of this game because I don't know that they'd be too excited to play in this game. They're ready to go to the NFL. That's certainly something you have to keep in mind. And also just the fact that, you know, we have no weather to go from at all if you're playing totals. I know some of these games are in a dome, but, you know, in the regular season, if you're betting a line on Monday or Tuesday, you have a general idea of what the weather might be like in that area by a Saturday. In these games now, there's really no way you could tell what the weather's going to be. And I know most of these games are played in spots where the weather usually isn't too bad, but occasionally you'll still get a bad game with weather. I think that, you know, you just have to be careful because if you take a line early and then something goes against you, you know, I've put myself in a bad situation a few times with, you know, I remember when Christian McCaffrey sat out and I had taken them early and I didn't blame him, you know, as somebody who could understand where he was coming from. But, you know, it kind of put me and my clients in a bad spot of knowing what to do. I'm definitely more cautious with grabbing them early on. In the regular season, I like playing lines as early as I can, consistently beat the closing line. In bowl season, I'm far more cautious about that. First of all, I do think, too, that some people play too many games in bowl season. I mean, there are a ton of bowl games. You don't have to play all of them. And I think that you should be very cautious of people who, you know, throughout the regular season are playing, you know, two or three games or three or four games on a Saturday, and all at once in bowl season, they're betting every single game. I think that's very dangerous. So I think you can pick your spots here. I mean, this isn't necessarily the best time to play really high volume. So, you know, I'll be lower volume this time of the year than I am during the regular season. And I know for, you know, a handicapper like myself, I could get more sales if I put out, you know, more plays and just try to sell everything. But at the same time, you know, I'm trying to make clients a profit. And I don't really think the best strategy is to just put up a play for every game.
No, I don't think so either. I mean, if you're one of our listeners out there and you want to play every bowl game, by all means, go ahead. You know, you're probably in bowl pick'em pools or whatever else, but just keep in mind that you probably don't want to make your normal bet size on every one of these games, because right. You're going to wind up playing, you know, 38 bowl games here. And would you play 38 games on a college football Saturday? Probably not. Why do it now? You know, some of these games just aren't going to have value. There's going to be too many unknowns. So probably a good reason to, you know, kind of lower that bet size a little bit. Again, a lot of stuff factors in the equation here. We'll keep talking about these different things on our various, you know, bowl preparation segments and go a little bit more in detail with some of these games once we get to game week here next week. But something you did mention here a little bit, coaching. You know, coaching, very, very important. Head coaches, coordinators, for example, one of my favorite bowl plays I'm looking at right now, North Carolina, because I love both of their coordinators. So I'm thinking about that as one where they've got plenty of time to get ready. I expect a really good game plan on both sides of the ball. You don't have to go out there and fire on those, but just start planting some of those seeds in your mind. And with all of this extra prep time, there are some coaches that are really good at this and some that are very bad at this.
Yeah, it's this is the time of the year where there's an increased emphasis on coaching. And like you said, it's head coaching, it's coordinators, it's all of the above. Some of these guys have proven that they're good at this and others have proven that they're not. I don't think it should surprise anybody that Dabo Swinney is 10-4 ATS in bowl games. He's proven himself to be very good at this. Whittingham.
And the thing with, sorry to interrupt, but the thing with Dabo Swinney, you know, you talk about some of these guys and like maybe they're playing, you know, MAC teams or maybe they're playing lower conference teams. Right. Dabo's really good against elite competition.
Yeah. Yeah, he is. And at this point, he certainly gets the benefit of the doubt. And, you know, as a Buckeyes fan, I'm not really excited about the fact that they have to play against Sweeney's team right away, certainly just because, you know, it makes their route pretty difficult. And you hate to go against a team that's that talented and is that well coached. But Kyle Whittingham's 8-4 ATS. I think that that's a really fascinating game, Texas and Utah. Tom Herman, 3-0. Skip Holtz 7-3, and then I'll put them, the two of them together. Craig Bohl, Chris Kleiman, from North Dakota State time and their FBS time. Obviously, Kleiman is all at North Dakota State, but 9-3 ATS and 11-5-1 ATS. And I was also wondering if you caught my thing that I put in the notes where I put Craig Bohl and spelled it with a W instead of an H.
I did see that. You know what, too, man? I mean, that's the thing is that like, you look at the team that he's got this year and all the close games that they won and they get through the Chambers injury. That dude can coach, man. He's good. It's not a sexy brand of football. It's very boring. It would fit well somewhere at like Boston College. I don't know if he'll be a candidate for that job, but that dude can coach. Again, it's not, you know, 2019, you know, reinventing the wheel on offense or defense, but that dude's just solid.
Absolutely. And you know, you think about the fact that North Dakota State has won so many games in FCS the last few years. They've had some really good coaches, and I think those coaches have really proven themselves this year. Both of those teams, Wyoming and Kansas State, teams that really overperformed this year. You know, I don't think anybody thought they'd be as good as they were. I think that has a lot to do with the head coaching, and those guys were just excellent there. So, I would think that they'll continue to be good in bowl games, honestly. You know, give them that much time to prep. They've proven that they're good at it. So I don't see any reason to think that that will change. I will say here's a few bad bowl coaches. You know, Rod Carey has to be at the top of the list. You have to say him first. 0-6 ATS. And let's be honest, if you remember Rod Carey's time in Northern Illinois, they're not just barely failing to cover. I mean, they were just getting blown out. I mean, they are just getting clocked. This is a team that was really not prepared well for bowl games at all. I'd be very scared to back Rod Carey, coach team. It's just a team that, you know, he has not proven he can get ready for this. You know, maybe he will this year, maybe he will one of these years coming up, but I don't want to bet on it. You know, he's proven that he's been bad at this, so I don't want to bet on it. Mike Leach is 2-7 ATS. I think that would surprise some people because, you know, clearly Leach is a good coach in general, but in bowl games, he hasn't been very good. So certainly something to keep in mind. Brian Kelly, 3-8 ATS. I know that a lot of people have differing opinions of Brian Kelly, so I won't say too much about Brian Kelly, but 3-8 ATS, so not very good in bowl games. Clay Helton, 0-3 ATS in bowl games. And as you were mentioning the USC and Iowa game, I was kind of thinking in my mind, so maybe you add a point to USC for the fact that they're closer to home and take away a point for the fact that they're coached by Clay Helton.
Yeah, no, that's very fair. That is definitely, especially recruiting is taking a hit now with Helton sticking around. I mean, the recruiting class for next year already wasn't very good. Now their long-term prospects not very good. It's not a great setup right now at USC with Clay Helton. Oh, and Mike Leach, 2-7 ATS, as you mentioned, and he's got to prep for the Air Force option, which is a really interesting game too. One that we'll talk about as we get closer to that one. But one other thing I want to mention here, and then we'll take a quick look at a couple of the bowl games that kind of stand out. Something you said over here in the notes, I guess, is very, very important. So maybe listen back to this twice. Maybe I'll repeat it again. But you've got a good note here about the public and what they mean during the bowl season.
Yeah, you know, I think that in general, just fading the public is probably an overrated strategy. And that's why I try not to talk about it too much on here. I know some guys think that you shouldn't pay any attention to what the public's doing. But I think there are some times of the year where it can be profitable. Bowl season has proven to be one of those times. Fading the public has been a great strategy. Taking teams receiving 40% or less of the bets, you would have gone 158 and 107 ATS. That's 59.6% since 2005. Fading the public is really been a good strategy in bowl season. I think that makes a lot of sense. I think that'll probably continue to be true. You have a lot of the public that's not terribly educated on, you know, what to do with betting bowl season. So it's almost like you can take advantage of the public not being terribly educated on these. And a lot of people who don't necessarily bet college football throughout the course of the season that don't know that much about these teams are just kind of go for the name brand team or the team that's the favorite or, you know, whatever their buddy says. You know, it's not going to be, I think there'll be a lot more people making bets on games that is not, you know, statistical based bet. It's not a modeling thing. It's something that they want to have action on the game. And usually those guys don't do very well.
Yeah, that's an excellent point. And the numbers back it up. I mean, hey, 60% in bowl season would be a whole hell of a lot of fun year in and year out. So hopefully we're able to isolate and find some of those games here. Like I said, we'll mention a few of these games. There's a lot of games that we could talk about, and we will talk about all of them here on the shows as we go throughout the bowl season. But, you know, it's kind of funny. You and I had a similar conversation here this morning to what Brad Powers said on Thursday's show last week. He said, I'm betting Washington in the bowl game. I'm going to bet on Chris Peterson. The head coach, Jimmy Lake, is already there, the current defensive coordinator. He's already been elevated to the head coach with Chris Peterson stepping down. I don't know if Brad did it or not. We'll ask him on Thursday. But this is about the worst possible matchup to want to back Chris Peterson here as he faces his former employer in the Las Vegas Bowl, the Boise State Broncos.
Right. It's a game where I sat there and looked at the -3 yesterday on Washington, and I really thought hard about betting this one, and I ended up not doing it. Now it's 3.5, even juiced at some places. Probably won't see 3 again. This is a hard one to figure out because Brian Harsin has been good in bowl games too. He's 4-1 ATS in bowl games, and he's covered by a lot in several of those games. And I know I was reading the press quotes from Chris Peterson, and he says, well, you know, it's exciting, the location where we're going. We're playing early in the year. There's not as big of a break. And then he says, well, you know, I'd rather it be against anybody except for Boise State, honestly. And you can't blame them. You know, I mean, of all the teams to play in your last game there at Washington, this is not who he would have wanted to play. And I know he even mentioned it's kind of interesting that it gets set up that way. But, you know, it's one of those things where, you know, some people will try to say that, you know, well, it's just by random chance, or they'll say, well, there wasn't any real reason behind that. I think we know there has to be a reason that Washington's playing Boise State. It, you know, it's going to be interesting for fans and so on. But I think this makes this a tough game to bet. I really wanted to bet Washington here. I'm not sure if I'll do it now.
Yeah, it sucks. You know, we kind of get these thoughts in our minds of, you know, oh, I want to play that team. You know, oh, I want to fade that team. Like you talked about fading the MAC, and it's like it's priced in the market already. You know, like I like Central Michigan. My line's virtually a coin flip there. It's priced into the line to fade the MAC in that game. As far as I'm concerned, I don't want to fade the MAC in that game, but I also know that the MAC has a reputation for not being very good. You know, in this game, wanted to take Washington just like everybody else did, and they give them Boise State. And you know what? The NCAA, it's never been about what it should be about. It's always about making money. They did Chris Peterson wrong here. They really, truly did. I mean, this is it's not right. You know, I mean, Chris Peterson's been a very good coach, took Boise State, you know, when they were in the WAC, to a position of national prominence. Everybody remembers the Statue of Liberty play. Jared Zabransky's on the cover of the damn NCAA football video game. Like, it's crazy. Then this is his send-off to play Boise State. It's bullshit. I almost don't want to bet the game just because I feel like it's my middle finger to the NCAA, even though they don't want you to bet on anything anyway.
Yeah. I mean, the NCAA has made some really questionable at best decisions. And I agree with you. I think that this is really, you know, this wasn't very cool to put Chris Peterson up against his team that really he was with Boise State. And that's where he made his name. He built them up, did a great job with Boise State. I know that they're, you know, he would want to play anybody except for them, and not very cool to have to play against that team.
No, not at all. It's frustrating. It pisses me off more than it should, because I don't have any control over it, obviously, and I don't even know, you know, Chris Peterson, but it still just feels so unfair for a variety of different reasons. How about we fast forward here to New Year's Eve and the Alamo Bowl. The last game of 2019 will be Utah and Texas down at the Alamo Dome in San Antonio. And this one kind of stood out to you a little bit.
Yeah, I think this is a really fascinating handicap. You know, this is a Utah team that played so terribly in that Pac-12 title game. Like I said, Kyle Whittingham's been really good in bowl games. I think this one's a lot different than the normal bowl game he's been in, though, because, I mean, they could have been in the playoffs, and then they play so poorly, they can't get any stops, and their defense has been so good. Texas now has the home crowd advantage. Obviously, we're going to hear a lot about Tom Herman as an underdog, and he's obviously been very good in that role. Texas is one of those teams that, you know, I did have them pegged correctly before the season. They were clearly overrated. This is a Texas team, though, that they're going to want to win this game. I think that they will probably be motivated here, and they're going to be playing in front of a home crowd, essentially. You know, I lean toward Texas plus the points, and this is not a power ratings lean. This is a and I think we will – I think you probably agree that power ratings mean less this time of the year than they do at any other time. I mean, these you can't just go by your power ratings only, or you probably could be in a tough spot too. I think that here it makes sense that Utah is favored by this number, but, you know, Texas, I think Texas has plenty of reasons to want this game pretty badly. I don't know what Utah's going to think here.
Yeah, I don't know either. I mean, I've got a power ratings overlay on this game. You know, I've got this one closer to double. I have this one in double digits. And if I give Texas a little bit for home field, you know, I'm probably in the 9.5, 10 type of range there. So even with that, I have an overlay. Does Zach Moss play for Utah here? I don't know. I think he showed everything he needed to in the Pac-12 championship game. Maybe he does stick around, play for his team. I know Whittingham's team will be prepared. I can't believe they weren't prepared last week. Maybe Mario Cristobal is just better than I've given him credit for. They will be prepared here, but I think Tom Herman's team probably will be too, especially at home in the Lone Star State, as you mentioned. So that one's tough for me. It's a real tough one. And this one, I don't think is as tough. I just don't know if I can do this. Michigan and Alabama here in the Citrus Bowl on January 1st. I've got to throw this out there because I know people think I'm a Michigan hater, and you're damn right I am. You don't go to Alabama expecting to play in the Citrus Bowl. You go to Alabama expecting to play for a national championship. If you go to Michigan, the Citrus Bowl is the best you can do nowadays. So with that in mind, I have no idea if Alabama shows up here. I don't know who plays for Alabama. All their wide receivers could sit this game out, and I wouldn't blame any one of them. Harbaugh's got to get this one, right?
Well, I mean, yeah. I think that, first of all, you know, neither one of us is going to like Michigan because we're Ohio State guys. And, I mean, to be honest, I'll root for Michigan in this game as a Big Ten guy. So, you know, yeah. you may think that I'm kind of a Michigan hater. I don't know if Adam will root for Michigan or not. Will you?
Never. Even if I have money on it, I'm still not going to root for him.
Yeah. Okay. So I'm going to root for the greater good of the Big Ten and root for Michigan in this one. I'll hold my nose and do that. I mean, this is not a game that I think is, you know, a team that I really love on either side. It's more of a game where this is a great chance for Michigan, right? I mean, if they're ever going to get a chance to beat a top team, this needs to be their chance. I mean, Michigan has a big motivational edge here. Bama does not want to play in this game. Michigan, this is a great opportunity for them. As I'm looking at this game, I mean, this is Harbaugh's chance. You know, he hasn't won those big games. This is really a big opportunity for them. That could be a great way to help recruiting, to help the program in future years. I think Michigan puts everything into this game. I see so far 85% of the bets are on Alabama, which is certainly very interesting. I think Bama will have several guys sit out in this game. It would surprise me if they don't. Even with all that said, it is hard to bet Michigan here. I mean, Michigan has not really proven in these big games to be worthy of, you know, betting on them. So I don't think it's easy to bet on Michigan, but I'd be worried to lay the points here with Alabama.
And once again, we talk about these little storylines that they always throw into these bowl games. Co-offensive coordinator and wide receivers coach last year at Alabama, Josh Gattis. So Saban gets to face another former assistant, and we all know what he's done to them throughout his coaching career. Albeit a lot of them are, you know, guys that are head coaches now, but you know, Josh Gattis was there in that program, you know, did oversee that excellent wide receiver class that they have. So you know, this was interesting, but again, yeah, that's the thing is, you know, does Alabama care at all? I mean, Mac Jones is going to care. There's that, you know, I mean, Tua's probably not coming back. So Mac Jones has got every reason to care. You know, I don't know. It's tough. But again, you've got to trust Harbaugh against a premier opponent, and he can't beat them. So, you know, that's such an interesting game again. And another interesting game on January 1st, not that we're going to talk about it because I want to get to the college basketball side. Georgia's back in the Sugar Bowl again. Are they excited about that? Probably not. They'd rather be in the playoff themselves. So, again, all these different types of things that factor into the bowl season here. And something cool. You know, you can find Kyle over at huntersportspicks.com, but he's also going to have a lot of free bowl game information for you over at his new venture, bettersportspicks.com. Better E-R, not O-R, like all of us are sports bettors, but you know, getting better sports picks over there. Tell us about what you got going on over there right now, man.
Yeah, in addition to Hunter Sports Picks, I'm going to have bettersportspicks.com, which will be kind of a unique site, a different site where I'll be posting more stuff for free. It's going to be a site where I post a lot of free information. I post systems, leans on plays that I didn't make, but came close to making the cut for me. It's something that I know a lot of bettors have asked about quite a bit. And the website name is somewhat too, because I want to make other people better at betting sports. You know, we're saying better so much that it's getting a little bit confusing, but bettersportspicks.com. Good way to go over there is sign up for the free members area, and you can go to bettersportsfix.com, sign up for the free members area. I'll be posting a lot of my thoughts and leans through the bowl season, bowl systems, et cetera. Some of the coaching numbers that I've quoted here. Again, that's a free sign up, and you can get that information over there at bettersportsfix.com.
Every resource is important. You know, so make sure you use that to your advantage over there. You know, Kyle does a great job with all the stuff that he puts out, and certainly hoping for the best for you there with that bettersportspicks.com website. And again, you can still find him over at huntersportspicks.com. So if you've got a subscription or something like that, he's not going anywhere. He's still over there at Hunter Sports Picks, but the Better Sports Picks site, a new addition. And of course, as always, you can follow him on Twitter at Kyle Hunter Picks. With that, we transition over to the college basketball side of things here now for our Handicapping the Hardwood segment. Obviously, this will be a little bit shorter, running longer here with the college football segment. But also, there's really not a ton to talk about to some degree here, at least in a relative sense, with college basketball right now, because a lot of colleges and universities going through exam week, and that kind of alters the schedule as well as some of these handicaps.
Yeah, absolutely. You look at the schedule this week in college basketball, it's as slow of a week as you'll ever get in college basketball. So if you're a college basketball handicapper or better, this is a slight break for you. I know that, you know, if you're handicapping other sports, it isn't really a big break because there's so much going on in, you know, college football season, NBA, NFL, NHL, if you're doing that, things like that. But college basketball, definitely a slow week. You know, you look at tonight, you've got three games on the board. You got some of the nights later this week, there's hardly any games either, Thursday and Friday. So very slow week in college basketball. So it makes sense that we'd have a little bit shorter segment for handicapping the hardwood this week. But I did want to say that this is a good time of the year to watch for situational spots. And I know that you've been doing the situational article there at Bang the Book. I think this is a really good week for it. I think the next few weeks are going to be really good weeks to look for situational betting. There's going to be some teams with long breaks, teams that don't play for 10 days or 14 days or something like that. Other teams coming back from long trips. After exam week, there's going to be a lot of games played in front of small crowds, less home court advantage. I think there's going to be some big underdogs win outright. And obviously finding those underdogs is the harder part because, you know, it's not very easy to take a team on the money line that's, you know, plus 20 or something like that. Actually, San Jose State almost did that against San Diego State yesterday, if you saw the end of that game. I think San Diego State was favored by 27 or 28 points or something like that. But they needed a three at the last second just to win the game. I think that there's going to be more spots like that to where afterwards you say, how did that happen? You know, that team is so much better than that. There's going to be some really sleepy spots coming up here in college basketball. You know, look at these situational articles that Adam puts up at bangthebook.com. I think that while looking at situational spots is helpful all throughout the season, I think that the next 2, 3, 4 weeks, the single best time to situationally bet college hoops.
Yeah, I think so too. There's a lot of stuff in play. Like you said, I mean, if you are somebody who kind of models or power rates college basketball, lower that home court advantage a little bit because, you know, students finish exams and they go home. You know, they don't hang around the dorms or anything like that. I mean, maybe some of the commuters, you know, come back in for the games, but a lot of these kids go home for the break, for the holiday break. So, you know, a lot less home court advantage. Some of the players, you know, maybe a little bit distracted. There's not as much going on for them either. You know, if some of their, you know, non-athlete friends aren't around, stuff like that. So those are considerations. And something else you mentioned too, and I kind of noticed this a little bit. I think I may have mentioned a game or two about this in that situational article. You've got some of these teams that play these awful non-conference schedules, play 6, 7 road games in a row. They've got to get those paycheck games so they can, you know, fund the athletic department. Well, they got to come home at some point. This may be that point because they've got to come back to class and take some of these exams. So there are some of those too. Teams that have been all over the country playing road games. Now all of a sudden you play at home for a game or two. That feels a little bit weird. You know, that's a little bit off, especially because you may be playing in front of, you know, 75 people at some of these schools. So situational spots definitely play a big role. You've got some local rivalry games this week, Iowa, Iowa State on Thursday, Colorado, Colorado State on Friday, UIC, University of Illinois, Chicago, and DePaul on Saturday. So you got some of those matchups, but also some of these games where, you know, teams, one team may have been playing, you know, 3 games in the last 7 days. Their team may not have played for 10 days, you know, so situational betting, always important, always a good starting point. But here, some of these spots may just be so extreme, they may be outright justifications for plays.
Yeah, and that's what I was going to say as well. A lot of times during college basketball season, I look for situations, and I'm not going to bet it just based on that situation. It's more if the price is right and that situation. Sometimes this time of the year, there are situations that are just so good or so bad that you have to bet it. So I think in the next few weeks, you might see some of those. And I think it was a good point you made about teams who have been on the road all the time. They play 6 or 7 games on the road in a row. And all once they come home, there are some people who think that that first game at home is a good spot to bet a team. I don't think that's true. I don't think you do either. I mean, it's one of those where you're so used to doing the whole road thing. You come home, especially at a time like this, where, like you said, There's less people at the arena. People have holiday functions. Students aren't around as much. And you come back to a home game, and in some of those cases, you're playing a team that you're not too excited to play against. That's not a good time to back that team. You know, if you want to back that team at home, I think you want to wait till the second or third game at home instead of that very first time.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Completely agree with that. And, you know, we're probably going to start, you know, I know we got all the bowl game stuff and there's obviously a ton to talk about with that. We'll probably start working in some more of the college basketball quick hitters, some little news and notes, some injury updates, some different things that are going on as we go throughout the month of December here and on into January. And of course, all the way through the NCAA tournament. But we do have a couple of injuries worth mentioning here on today's segment.
Yeah, a couple big men with injuries that really mean a lot to their team. Seton Hall, Sandro Mamukulashvili. Quite the name there. I will say he's a very good player. He really helps that team a lot. And Powell has been such a good player for Seton Hall. He is really going to be a one-man team now because they needed that big man down low. He was doing a great job on the boards and scoring. I think Seton Hall is really a one-man team at this point, especially on offense. I watched that game last night. I had Seton Hall and Iowa State over the total. That loss, to be transparent, I had a bad weekend in college basketball. I'd had a really nice start, really had a bad weekend in college basketball specifically. Did well in the NFL. NBA was fine. College football was split, but really a bad weekend in college basketball. I had the over in that game. They played to 81 possessions and just nobody could throw a rock in the ocean. I mean, it was just unbelievable that game. That happens sometimes, obviously, and you just move on. But I will say that it certainly didn't help that he was injured right at the beginning of the game. And then you have Miles Powell out there just doing it by himself. And, you know, he wasn't taking very good shots, but it's because the other team knew that he was, you know, he was going to be the offense for Seton Hall. So Seton Hall is a team that I'd be careful about backing here in the near term.
Yeah, for sure. 81 possessions and 142 points is not a whole lot of fun. And both teams, they're struggling to shoot from distance, 12 of 49 from three. That certainly doesn't help there. But you know, another thing here too, is that you get an injury like that. And if you're Seton Hall, you're starting to try and position yourself for Big East play. So while you don't have Mamukulashvili for the next 6 to 8 weeks, you may be experimenting with some things and trying to figure out who in the hell can actually help Miles Powell out. So maybe they slow down the tempo. Maybe they don't want to get into, you know, some of these run up and down the floor types of games. Maybe they do because now they don't have a big man. So they're going to be more perimeter oriented. Watch for that. See if their tempo stays high the next couple of games. May take the odds makers some time to adjust to those types of things. So when you get a big injury, something generally has to change. Whether younger guys get more playing time and offensive efficiency goes down, or a team may slow it down or may speed it up because now they don't have to worry about that big man running the floor. Take a game or two and see what adjustments they make and then see if you can extract some value from
it. Yeah, and I want to make a couple more points about that game just from watching it. First of all, Powell is not 100% healthy either. So now he has everything on him and he is clearly not 100% healthy. At the end of that game, Seton Hall put on a press against Iowa State. And Iowa State looked like they had never faced a press in their entire life. I mean, it was unbelievable how bad they looked against the press. I would imagine that some other teams are going to play Iowa State and put on a press. And actually, some of the teams on their schedule do press. So that's something to keep in mind as you go forward, that Iowa State really needs some serious work against the press break.
How have you not, like, how do you suck against the press when West Virginia is in your conference?
Yeah, no, it's surprising. I will say that, you know, they were setting up against the press and Seton Hall has his own press up there. And I would say just nobody is moving. I mean, they're all just standing on the court close together. Nobody's moving. And the announcers were kind of like, what are they doing? I mean, you know, somebody's got to move. Somebody's got to come get the ball. Seton Hall got three or four steals. Missed shots or else they could have been right back in the game again. But certainly something to keep in mind with Iowa State. And, you know, West Virginia is not pressing quite as much as they did in the past. I assume that they'll press still a decent amount. And I think that they'll want to press Iowa State after they see that. So keep that in mind for Iowa State going forward. I assume they'll get better at it. I think Steve Prohm's a pretty good coach. So maybe it won't be a huge problem later in the season, but at least for now, Iowa State very, very weak against the press. The other injury I was going to mention, Charles Bassey for Western Kentucky, suffered a knee injury late in their win against Arkansas. I know he was supposed to get an MRI yesterday, and I was looking at it and didn't see any news. I don't know if it's come out so far today or not, but if Bassey's out for a while, this is a big hit to their team. They won against Arkansas. This is a Western Kentucky team that is a quality team. You know, they're a good mid-major team, but Bassey means a lot to this team, and it would really hurt them a lot if he's out.
Yeah, it definitely would. 27.3% usage rate for him on the season here. 6'11 sophomore, and you know, guy that does a lot of stuff for him, gets to the line a lot, very efficient down there in the block. So, you know, again, very important to pay attention to these injuries. And if we think finding injury information in college football is hard, yeah, it can be very tough in college basketball, especially with some of the way under the radar teams. So we take a look here at some games, and again, we try to do the best we can here. We don't have lines on these, and as Kyle mentioned, three line games on Monday night in college basketball, but hopefully you were paying attention last week. We got you an easy winner with Rhode Island looking ahead a little bit. So we try to do that here as much as we possibly can with some of these games later on during the week, but Butler and Baylor won here on Tuesday night. We'll talk about this game, and then I have a point to make about Butler for later in the week.
Yeah, Butler has been really impressive so far this year. Nobody thought they'd be this good. You know, Butler 9-0, and they've played some decent teams. They played Minnesota, Missouri.
Blew out Florida.
Yeah, but Florida, I don't know what's wrong with Florida, to be honest with you. I mean, they should be good. I think it's surprising, and I'll try not to go on too much of a Florida tangent, but it's surprising that Florida has as much athleticism as they do, and yet they want to play really slow. I don't know why Mike White wants them to play so slow. You'd think that they would be a good team at running, but I don't know. Florida, to me, still has a high upside, but I don't know what's wrong with that team. Butler, to me, Kamar Baldwin has been so good. I mean, this guy has really led his team well. He's a senior, takes over at the key points. He had a huge shot in that Stanford game where they won by 1 point. The win at Mississippi was a nice win, too, for Butler. So they've had some nice wins this year. This is really a big test, though. Baylor's playing well. We've probably given Scott Drew too much of a hard time in the past. You know, he has done pretty well with Baylor. He's not in, you know, Jim Mora Jr. territory in football or Rick Barnes territory for college basketball. But, you know, this is a Scott Drew coach team where, you know, we know what his teams do. They're good on defense. They're really good on the offensive glass. I think that the interesting thing to watch here is the rebounds. You know, Butler's been really good on the defensive board so far this year. Baylor's played faster this year, but one of the ways that they score the best still has been putbacks. You know, they're seventh in the nation in offensive rebounding percentage. They're not a great shooting team. They've shot pretty well from three, but this Baylor team is going to rely pretty heavily on getting offensive rebounds. Baylor coming off that big win over Arizona, I think you could at least argue that this isn't a great spot for Baylor here. You know, that Arizona win really meant a lot to him, especially the way Arizona had played so far this year. So I think this is an interesting game for both teams.
It is. It is a very interesting game for both teams, and especially because it's back-to-back big tests. You know, Butler answers the call against Florida over the weekend. Baylor does the same against Arizona. If you can win a game scoring 0.86 points per possession, you feel like you got away with one a little bit, but Baylor been very good defensively, although the second time they've struggled on offense. The first one was Washington. Again, that was a game against that Mike Hopkins zone. Second time here against Arizona. Butler's a pretty good defensive team too. So despite the concerns about, you know, the high percentage putbacks, maybe this is an under type of game.
I would lean to the under. I think that Butler can control the tempo here. I don't think Baylor will shoot terribly well. You know, KP has this one at 130. You know, I would want it to be a little bit higher than 130 if I take the under here, but I wouldn't want to take the over, I'll say that.
So the point I wanted to make about Butler here, Saturday they're at home against Southern University. Now, Southern University is one of the worst teams in college basketball. They're 336th right now, according to Bart Torvik. But they're going to be about a 30-point favorite in that game against Southern. That game is sandwiched between Baylor and then Purdue on a neutral. Now, the Purdue game is a week later, but Saturday game after exams, I doubt there's going to be a good crowd at the Fieldhouse for this one, especially in such a huge favorite role. Southern may just be that bad that they can't keep this thing close, but man, I would not expect Butler to be at its best on Saturday in a game like that.
Yeah, I mean, I agree with you. I think it's a really bad spot. I still think it takes, you know, some stones to take the Southern against Butler. You know, that's not really going to be.
Well, I've got stones, damn it. I'm going to do it.
I knew that was coming.
But back in with me next Monday when Southern gets to the window or loses by 70. I don't know. It'll be one of the two.
Right. One of the two. But, yeah, Southern's not an easy team to back. Really a SWAC team against a quality team. From another conference is not easy to back. I will say that I agree with you totally that is not a game where you want to lay the points with Butler, though. That's a very dangerous spot.
Yeah, that's the thing. You know, again, we use these situational spots as something to narrow down the card. And you know, maybe you don't always have to make a play on them, but what the hell? It's only money, right? We'll make more of it tomorrow. All right, so also on Tuesday night here, Maryland and Penn State as the Big Ten playing conference games. So is the Mountain West. They've played a few. ACC's played a few as well. We've got one here between Maryland and Penn State, and this one is very interesting for a lot of different reasons.
Yeah, Maryland's first road game of the year. They played several neutral site games, but they haven't played a true road game yet. Penn State was beaten down by Ohio State last Saturday. You know, Ohio State's played really well. I don't think they're quite as good as they've looked so far this year, but I think Ohio State's a quality team. They're a very well-coached team. Penn State, to me, coming off that loss, in a pretty good spot here, you know, bounce back spot. Maryland's a team that's really gotten some very close wins here. They were fortunate to beat Illinois the other day, very fortunate to win that game. They were losing almost the entire game. They had some close wins against Temple and Harvard. Not great competition, decent competition. Penn State's played the slightly tougher schedule. Penn State's had a pretty good home court advantage here over the last few years. I think Penn State's a well-coached team. You know, that scrappy kind of team that you don't want to have to play. Maryland, I love their talent. I think Maryland has high upside. I don't think Mark Turgeon is a great coach. I think that, you know, he's not a guy I trust late in the season either. You know, he hasn't really proven himself as you get into March. You know, they've had pretty quick exits, you know, have his teams. I would say that I think Maryland has a high upside. I'd be worried about whether they can realize that upside or not based on, you know, the coaching staff hasn't really been that good. But to me, this one, it's Penn State or pass. You know, I think Penn State will probably be +1.5 or something like that. You know, I wish I could get more points, obviously, but I lean Penn State in this game. I think Maryland has been fortunate to go unbeaten so far this year. I think their upside's really high, but I think it's a tough spot for them. It's a really big test. First road game, Penn State in a bounce back spot. Maryland was very fortunate to get by in their last game. I think Penn State would be my lean here.
Yeah, I think that makes a lot of sense, you know, especially because you're talking about conference games where, you know, things get a little bit tougher, things tighten up a little bit more. Also, again, this is a Tuesday night game. This is not a Saturday game. It's a Tuesday night game. The students are still there. You know, they're still taking exams and all that. So true home court advantage for Penn State here. First really tough spot for Maryland. And something else you mentioned there a little bit, the strength of schedule discrepancy. Good time of year to start looking at those things too.
Absolutely. This is a good time of the year to be looking at strength of schedule where one team's going to have played a lot better schedule than the other sometimes. And this one, it's not a huge disparity, but there will definitely be some games like that.
All right. So do you want to talk about Army and Merrimack on Wednesday or, you know, Fairleigh Dickinson and St. Peter's, anything like that?
I mean, you know, I'm not opposed to talking any game in college basketball. I mean, I don't think most people would be too excited to hear about those teams, but Merrimack plays that zone defense that's interesting. And okay, maybe you didn't actually.
No, you're good. No, go ahead.
No, I mean, you've got Army trying to run up and down the court. You got Merrimack sitting in that soft zone defense that Joe Gallo plays. You know, I think that's an interesting game because Merrimack is a team that could provide some matchup problems for some teams. I think I would lean Merrimack in that one. And Fairleigh Dickinson and St. Peter's, I can't find anything too interesting about that game. So maybe I'll leave that one to you.
That's fair. I did mention that one in the situation article, though. Those two teams only about a half hour apart. Those are always kind of interesting games to me. But, you know, again, it's a very light slate during the week, and then Saturday is absurd. Gonzaga, Arizona, Utah State, BYU, Memphis at Tennessee, Oregon at Michigan. You got Syracuse at Georgetown, which Georgetown, that program is in shambles all of a sudden. You got New Mexico State, New Mexico rematch. A lot of good games coming up here on Saturday, but one that you wanted to mention specifically, and again, we love to go under the radar here, which is why we just talked about Merrimack for 30 seconds. Northern Colorado and Wyoming is one that's kind of intriguing to you.
Yeah, Northern Colorado and Wyoming. This is probably my favorite one of the week as far as the ones that we're talking about, where last week I liked Rhode Island. They did end up getting there. I like Northern Colorado here. Wyoming does not have a good team this year. This is a Wyoming team that I kind of wish they had been a little bit better the last couple games, because then we would have gotten more value in this one. But I think Northern Colorado is the better team. And also, Wyoming usually has the advantage at home because the other team's not used to playing at elevation. Northern Colorado obviously is used to playing at elevation. So, you know, there's no advantage there. Northern Colorado, if you look back this year, they lost in overtime at Northern Iowa. I think that's a good performance, especially for a long trip. They were tied with West Virginia on the road with 6 minutes left. This is a well-coached team. Wyoming is a really weak team. I like Northern Colorado's chances of winning this game. I think they'll probably be favored by a small amount. I would want to lay the points here with Northern Colorado. And even the fact that they're just going to be favored, you know, just tells you a lot about Wyoming. But I like Northern Colorado's chances of winning this game against a, quote, bigger name team. You know, Wyoming is still the bigger name than Northern Colorado. A team like Northern Colorado has got to be up for a game like this.
Yeah, for sure. And again, these are the different types of spots you can look for. It's a little brother, big brother thing, or, you know, getting a chance to beat someone from a stronger conference than yours. You know, and these are things that are going to happen, you know, with some frequency here at this time of the year with exams, as we mentioned, you know, kind of a sleepy environment on campus. Those are things that you definitely want to be looking for here at this time of the year in college basketball. If you missed it, if you didn't listen to the College Football First Look, we did mention Kyle's new site, bettersportspicks.com. Going to offer up a lot of free information there, but also you still do a lot for huntersportspicks.com. What's going on over there right now, man?
Yeah, huntersportspicks.com, nothing's going to change. So if you're a newsletter subscriber, if you're a subscriber at huntersportspicks.com, nothing will change for you. Just Better Sports Picks is just going to be a little bit different site with more free information, some different offerings. But sign up for the free picks newsletter already. If you haven't already, at huntersportspicks.com, I'll send those over on the weekend. Usually try to send a couple during this time of the year. It gets a little bit busy, so sometimes I only get one a week out. But we'll be sending free picks, doing some contests through that. Lowered prices on the college basketball season pass, so you can check that out if you haven't already. And also, like Adam said, bettersportspicks.com is another site now where I'll be putting free information, have liens, things like that up. So you can go sign up for the free members area there if you haven't already.
Yeah, a lot of bowl game information coming your way over there at bettersportspicks.com. And of course, as always, at Kyle Hunter Picks on Twitter. Kyle, appreciate the time as always, buddy. Thank you so much for joining me. We'll talk to you again next week.
Take care, man. Thanks.
There you go. There's Kyle Hunter, professional handicapper over at huntersportspicks.com. Also his new venture, bettersportspicks.com, at Kyle Hunter Picks on Twitter. Coming up on our Tuesday edition of the show, we'll chat with Brian Blessing, the host of Sportsbook Radio and Vegas Hockey Hotline. We'll do some NFL and some NHL with him. And then Ralph Michaels unable to join the program. I will explain that on tomorrow's show. We'll see if we get another guest for the Tuesday program. If not, I'm sure I'll find something to talk about, but a little bit of a short notice there thing there with that. So I'll try to do the best I can, get somebody else on the program for that second segment there on Tuesday. That'll do it for me. Thank you so much for listening, everybody, and I will talk to you again tomorrow.